Hey, hey, I'm your host, the Dr. Danko. Come on in. You've been missing out, so let's begin. Oh, Pumpkin underscore Crumb is your host here too. When you hear the beat, you know what to do. Why didn't you warn me? Why didn't you warn me now? Why didn't you warn me? Why didn't you warn me? Hey.
Good evening and welcome to Why Did Not You Warn Me? I'm your host, Matthew, the Dr. Danko.
And I'm Hillary Crumb, the co-host.
Yeah. So this episode's a little different. we just haven't podcasted due to, I want to say the last time we were going to podcast, you were dying.
I was super sick for like 2 weeks.
Yeah.
And now
I'm dying.
So, but he's muscling.
The show must go on.
Right.
The show must go wrong.
The plan is to do like not double length, but like an extra long.
An extra long podcast that I can split up into two podcast episodes. So we can have, because it's episode 20 we're on.
Damn.
Yeah. So this will be 20 and 21.
Okay.
Because there's a lot of shit that we've both done and seen since our last episode.
You're going to talk for like one podcast length about things that you've seen, and I'm just going to fuck off for like an hour.
No, you're going to sit here and nod and smile. Yeah.
Right. And then we're going to talk about the one thing that we did together.
Yeah.
In the last 2 weeks.
That's true. Yeah.
Yeah. So, and you know, your voice is going to go in and out, and I'm going to make fun of you for it.
That's fine. It was very awful this morning. I was like squeaky and high-pitched.
He came home from work early,
which doesn't happen ever.
You must be like deceased, but
well, somebody was nice enough to stay for me so that I didn't have to close, because I work at, you know, Go Ape, so it's outside and it's manual labor, and it was very hot today, and like for half your job you're just talking to customers, like teaching them how to set up stuff, and I was like going out and my voice was cracking and things like that, and
puberty's rough.
It's a real bitch. So what have you listened to, watched, read, everything for the last 2 weeks?
Well, I've been reading, like rereading a lot of stupid garbage books just because they're here. I'm not even going to talk about them because it's pointless. But while I was driving to the zoo, I had to sit in rush hour for like an hour and a half in each direction, sometimes longer. So actually, I had asked you to download me some audiobooks because, you know, what else am I going to do?
Well, you can't
listen
to Hogwarts without me.
Right. Also,
it's real hard.
It's slow going.
I'm so apprehensive to finish based on everything that's already happening. Like, I mean, granted, it's now picking up, but it was slow going.
Yeah. There's a reason that, like, the entire, like, the movie is broken up into two, and the second one is just the Battle of Hogwarts.
Right.
And then the first one is, like, the first three quarters of the book where
nothing
happens
at all. It's so bad.
Yeah, and the last one is, yeah, and the last movie is just this battle.
Well, that's what you're waiting for seven books,
right,
basically.
The final showdown.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, when is this fucker going to leave us alone?
So, I can't listen / finish, I think is what that was supposed to be. I can't fish in Harry Potter without you.
Right.
And I don't want to. So my best friend Devin, who I've talked about a lot, her book isn't out yet due to a publishing snafu.
Oh, I was going to say, didn't it be out the 24th?
It was supposed to be out on her birthday, the 24th, but her publisher is apparently not super reliable because it is a tiny little publishing company. So Devin recommended this book called The Hate You Give by, and I just looked this up because I forgot the woman's name.
Wow.
By Angie Thomas. And I decided to listen to it because I had all this time on my hands. So the book is called The Hate You Give by Angie Thomas.
Angie Thomas. You just said it.
And it's about this girl named Star Carter, who is a young African-American girl who lives in a fairly, like, race is so complicated.
It is complicated.
Because I'm never sure, like, what the appropriate terms are, and I don't want to be offensive.
Well, let's just put a blanket statement over this, saying that, yes, we don't know what we're talking about.
Saying,
we're not...
please correct me if I have unintentionally said something wrong. I would absolutely love to do this the right way.
We don't want to plead ignorance, but there are just things that we don't know how to approach, so...
Right, and also, like, the difference between Black and African-American, like, African-American is sort of what we've been taught, but now there's sort of more... discussion to the fact that, like, not all Black people want to be identified as African because, you know, but so I think I'm going to stick with Black for the purposes of this discussion. And if that's wrong, I wholeheartedly apologize and please correct me. So Star Carter is a young, she's a 16-year-old Black girl, and she lives in this fictional neighborhood called Garden Heights, which is a fairly typical inner city Black neighborhood. And the story opens, the novel opens. Star is at a party with a couple of her friends, and she's feeling a little bit out of place because Star's parents put her in into like a white prep school because they wanted her out of this neighborhood where you will get to it. The education isn't great and the quality of life isn't great, and it's all deeply discussed in the novel. But Star and her friend are driving home from this party and they get pulled over by a police officer, and her friend doesn't comply. Star was taught when she was like 12 years old, she said her parents sat her down and had the conversation of what you do if you are pulled over. Like, you keep your hands where they can be seen at all times. You are polite. You are respectful. You do everything they tell you to do. Like, you don't...
Which, like, in theory, should be the way any person approaches, like, that situation of, like, they're getting pulled over. So you just... do what the officer says, and, like, that's it. But
there is also this undercurrent of the necessity to have that conversation with a young Black teenager because of
the shit that happens.
What happens.
Yeah.
Because there are too many stories of trigger-happy white cops. And this is one of those stories. This is a novel about a young girl whose friend, the guy who was driving the car, wasn't following the rules, and he did not do anything wrong. He was in no way threatening, but the officer shot him and killed him in front of her. And predictably, it blows up the way these things have started doing. And the book takes it, like, all the way from that night and that incident through, like, the cop not being charged and through the case being taken before a grand jury, and them just deciding to not indict this cop for murder. And just the dynamic, the character, Star is a fascinating character because she grew up in this Black neighborhood. Her father used to be a gang member, is since, like, reformed. Like, he's still very much a part of, you know, the community in their neighborhood, but he doesn't deal with any of the gang shit anymore. He has no patience for it. He has no patience for people that deal with it. Her parents are pretty amazing. There's one point during the book where Star is just, like, she's so frustrated by the way the world is, and she's sitting down with her father, and they're talking about one of Tupac's things is apparently that Thug Life is an acronym that stands for "The hate you give little infants fucks everyone,"
which I didn't even know.
Didn't either. And, you know, "The hate you give," hint hint, the title of the book. So Star and her dad are talking about what the hate is that's given that is fucking these little infants and everyone else. And they talk about the fact that in this neighborhood where Star and everyone she knows lives, the schools are terrible. There's no funding. There aren't, like, factories being built in that neighborhood so there can be employment. Like, it's, I don't want to say it's almost systematic because it is systematic.
Right.
This just oppression, the de facto segregation. We can say all we want that segregation isn't legal anymore, but it's what happens.
Yeah.
And because Star spends half her life there and half her life at this white school, she's constantly having to think about which person she is. Is she Garden Heights Star, or is she, I forget the name of her school. And like when she's at school, she has to be careful about not being like ghetto or being the angry black girl. And it, like, the book goes hard with all of these issues, and like a bunch of Star's, one of Star's best friends is white and just says these like casually racist things that for years Star has just been sort of letting them slide because, you know, what are you going to do? But in the wake of this tragedy, she just has less and less and less patience for it until she finally calls the girl on it.
Yeah.
And the girl's just such a bitch. They also talk about Khalil is the name of the boy who was shot.
Mm-hmm.
And they go into how on the news coverage it's, you know, suspected drug dealer Khalil. And then, like, and Star is thinking about, you know, this boy who she's known since she was, you know, 6 years old.
Yeah.
And now he's a thug.
Right.
He's, and they're talking about, you know, the police officer is this upstanding family man, and this 16-year-old possible drug dealer.
Right.
And, like, it's just,
so it's fucked.
It's so fucked up.
Yeah.
And the most fucked up part is that that's what happens.
Right.
Like, we don't hear about the lives that these young teenagers have. We hear about the possible gang affiliations.
Right. And, like, that seems to always be what they point to, is like, you know, the shit that they might be into, and just based on where they live in their community, like, it's messed up.
It's super messed up. And Star goes, like, towards the beginning, she doesn't want to be, she doesn't want to be known as the girl who witnessed that. She wants to just keep being herself and staying, you know, below the radar. But then, you know, she gets brought in for questioning. And they're asking her, like, you know, were you guys drinking at the party? Did you guys do drugs? Did you know he was selling drugs? She's like, are you trying to find some, like, are we on trial here? Because I didn't think we were, because he didn't shoot himself. Like, and he didn't make the officer shoot him. And, like, and I was, like, while I was listening to the book, like, throughout the whole thing, I'm wondering, you know, how are they gonna finish this?
Yeah.
Like, you know, are we gonna veer off into a fantasy world where these people get justice?
Right.
Or are we gonna stay in reality, which is these cases never go to trial.
Mm-hmm.
Or if they do, there is never any justice. And it, you know, they get hung up on tiny little details of, like, the police officer swore he saw Khalil reach for a gun.
Yeah.
The only thing in the car was a black hairbrush. And that is what the case gets hung on.
Jeez.
That had to be a threat. He thought, he felt threatened. So he shot the kid 3 times in the street. Like,
yikes.
Yeah, it's a lot. But Star goes from not wanting to be involved to realizing that she has to be.
Yeah.
And her father was a huge proponent of the Black Panther movement. And just using your voice in within your neighborhood, within your community, to fight oppression and to, you know, to stop the flow of hate that's fucking everyone.
Yeah.
And, like, just, like, and her father also has a big problem with people who just move out of areas like that, because he thinks that, I keep staring at our Black Panther poster because we're sitting, you know, right here looking at them. What was I saying? He thinks that it's better to stay within these communities and help change from the inside.
Yeah.
So he got out of, like, all this gang stuff, and now he runs, like, a local supermarket. He owns it. And a lot of the young people that Star is acquainted with have worked for her dad at one time or another. And one of the boys that she's friends with, like, ends up getting like over his head in this gang stuff, and he goes to Star's dad and is like, I don't know what to do, but I don't want to die and I don't want to do this anymore, but they'll kill me if I try to quit. And he's like, come work at the store, we'll figure it out. So like there's that whole angle. Star is dating a white boy who she met at school, and she goes like back and forth over and over and over again throughout the book, like, I can't date him, he's white, my father first of all will murder him because he has no respect for black women who date white guys, but also like Chris, this boy, like he couldn't possibly have any idea how Star sees the world or what it's like to be black, because he's never had to live with that oppression. And like, to Chris's credit, every time Star brings this shit up to him, he listens and he shuts up and he thinks about it and then he accepts it. Like, so there are some redeemable white characters, but that's just so not the fucking point. Like, the point is that we really, like, race is such, it's such a more divisive issue than white people want to admit. It's just, it's a completely different way of having to live in the world. Like, when we get pulled over, it's just annoying. It's not.
Right, it's like a minor inconvenience.
Right, it's like, oh, but I'm going to be late. I'm going to have to deal with this shit and pay a fine. It's not like,
I have to be
very careful right now. Right. Like, yeah, like, it's crazy. I said this to you a million times while I was listening to the book, but I think it should be required reading for every high schooler, possibly every person ever.
Right.
But the way the book ended, the cop was not indicted. He faced no criminal charges. But there were like riots all over Star's neighborhood in like the aftermath of this. And one of the things, I'm just going to keep talking about this for a really long time.
I'm going to take over eventually. But...
okay. Like when Ferguson was so crazy, like one of the things that just, it didn't make any sense to me was why protesting became rioting. And so at one point towards the end of the book, Star and her friends are like out on the streets while this is happening. And people are like, burning down a McDonald's and a Rite Aid, and it's like, what is this doing? Who is this serving?
Right.
And one of the characters is like, I mean, everybody is just so angry, and he's saying, you know, my mom worked at that McDonald's and they paid her like shit, and like, so it's just, it's everything boiling over, and it's not right. It's not what's gonna it's not what's gonna change anything. But you know, you get to that point where doing the right thing hasn't changed anything. So you try the wrong thing and that doesn't change anything. Right. And it's just overwhelming frustration of what can we even do? Like everywhere these people turned, they were just shut down. And no matter what course of action they took, it was never yielding results. So like, I don't know if I did a good enough job explaining that, but it made me understand a little bit more why, you know, sometimes things turn violent and get out of control. But Star's father's store ended up getting burned down in these riots, and like one of the last scenes, Star's like, what are we gonna do? And her dad and like all like the members of their community are just like, we rebuild. I mean, you do what you have to do. So they started the process of rebuilding, and Star is still, you know, just trying to come to terms with everything that happened and deciding that being silent about what she witnessed is just not an option. And there's just this really like overwhelming part of the book where she's saying, you know, I'm doing this for Khalil, but I'm also doing it for Trayvon and Freddie and Tamir. Just like just a litany.
Yeah.
Because there are so many. And she even went all the way back, like, to Emmett Till. I was like, driving the Liberty Bridge, just sobbing.
Yeah, that's heavy stuff.
It was a fucking lot. book was really, really life-changing, and I spoiled it a lot. But it's worth the read because it just... I like to think of myself as a fairly socially aware person, but, I mean, it's really true that you have no idea how people live and how people think until you walk a mile in their shoes. And this book was... It was very much... It felt like living inside her world.
Yeah.
And it was a world that I was not familiar with, was not comfortable with, didn't like the way I looked from within it, because, you know, white people think we're helping, and a lot of the things that we are saying and doing, like, it might be well-intentioned, but it doesn't matter.
Yeah. It's just how it translates.
Right. Yeah, and it's just trying to figure out how to meet people, you know, on their terms to actually be able to affect change. I also... Whoever narrated the audiobook was incredible. Mm. A lot of the dialect stuff reminded me of almost of Their Eyes Were Watching God by Zora Neale Hurston.
Oh, yeah.
In the way that it was, because I had picked up this book to try to like read it before, and I wasn't like, I read like the first chapter or something and wasn't like impressed enough to buy it. But I think that having it read to me was helpful.
Yeah,
so I highly recommend that. I'm probably going to buy a hard copy of it because I need it on my shelf.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, so that's what I listened to. I had, you know, a couple of weeks of emotional upheaval, but...
Yeah, no, you would come home and, like, just tell me all the stuff that was happening, and I'd be like, holy shit.
Yeah, it was a lot. It's still a lot. I'm clearly still processing it.
Yeah.
Just, that's the world that we live in. And I mean, the sort of, my takeaway from it, you know, in addition to everything, was like, no, there still hasn't been justice, and there's not like a due process for things like this, but hopefully the next time a cop pulls over a couple of black teenagers in a car, he stops and thinks, like, you know, this could hugely blow up in my face if, you know, if I'm stupid about this, like, so hopefully it just encourages people to just stop for a second.
Yeah,
that's it. I mean, I could probably keep talking, but I'll let you have a turn. So what have you been watching? Because I know it's been a lot.
Well, yeah, what haven't I been watching?
Right.
Well, first and foremost, I just want to say I didn't get the chance to watch, I want to say the title is Batman Ninja, or Ninja Batman, or something like that. But it's an anime style... DC...
Batmanime.
No. First of all, it's already has a name, and it's Batmanga.
Gross.
But that's a thing that exists.
It's manga.
That's fine. Manga is some people's pronunciation of it. But anyways,
right.
My buddy Bobby bought the DVD or Blu-ray or something, and it had a digital code.
Hmm.
And he's like, I'm never going to use this digital code. Here, take it, and you can talk about it on your podcast.
Nice.
I was able to access it, but my computer was fucking up with streaming it, because it doesn't give you a hard copy of it. It like stores it on a digital library through whatever site it has. So I didn't get to watch that, but it doesn't matter because I watched a shit ton of other things. So hopefully I can get my computer working so I can watch it for the next episode.
Right.
So we'll go all the way back to 2 weeks ago.
Shit. Let's do it.
I watched season one of Scream again. I don't remember if I talked about it on the last episode. I feel like I talked about season two.
I think so.
Because it had taken... I had watched season one like in the summer of 2016. Season one. I would watch then, and then just so much time had gone by that I didn't have access to season two until it came to Netflix, and then I watched season two, but I was like, what the fuck? I can't even remember what happened in season one. But season two was great. The twist they have at the end there was really great, and then there's a additional episode, which is like their season finale, that they introduce a whole nother story. It's fucking weird, and it's like a two-part episode. And then introduces like a cliffhanger for season three. But I went back and watched season one to remember what I was missing. And season one, I think season one is really strong because it's introducing this whole idea of like Scream, but for television. Like, right. The thing that I was trying to figure out when watching season two was how it tied into the movies.
Yeah, I remember you telling me that.
And when I rewatched season one, I realized it doesn't. And that's because it sort of takes the concept of the Scream movies. Like, so there's this girl that had some shit happen to her in the past. And now she has a daughter.
I thought you were going to say a dog. And then she got a dog, so everything's fine.
Everything's fine.
Right.
But this town is sort of labeled as, like, Murder Town, much like it is in the movies. So in the movies, the town is Woodsboro. In the television show, it's called Lakewood.
Okay.
And then, you know, the story revolves around this group of high school kids, and they start dying off one by one.
Is it the same town?
No.
Okay.
And it's not like a neighboring town or something like that.
So it's just also called Scream.
The television show is called Scream, the TV series, and the movies are called Scream.
Right.
But they almost exist in two different universes.
Huh.
Now, Nev Campbell, who's the star of Scream,
uh-huh.
1 through 4, said, like, if the show's good enough, maybe I'll do a cameo on it. And, like...
hasn't happened.
It hasn't happened yet, but season 3's coming, and... It also doesn't use, when they announced that Scream was happening as a TV series, they released, like, an artist rendering or whatever of the mask for the killer, which is entirely different from the Scream mask, which...
Is that, like, the Halloween mask that I'm thinking of?
Yeah,
like,
the white one, with the painting is Psycho.
Okay, with, like, the black eyes.
No, the screaming one with the...
Oh, the hands on the face.
Yeah.
Gotcha. Isn't
that Psycho or something like that?
It might Screaming. Just be called The Scream.
The Scream. That's it. That would make sense. Crossing things in my mind. Yes, it's called The Scream.
The mask
existed, but then when they were making Scream, they were like, this is a good mask.
Gotcha.
And they used it, and then it caught on. So now you can find it in every Rite Aid drugstore around Halloween and all that.
Right.
But for the television show, they made it like... It's similar in the fact that it's all white and there's, like, large eye holes and whatnot. But then the mouth, it looks very much like a sex doll. It's just a wide-open mouth.
We both made that face.
And it was very weird, especially for somebody who loves Scream, like, that why didn't they use the mask that, like, it's known for.
Right, the famous mask.
That it went from being, like, Ghostface, which is what they call it, to the Scream mask. Well, no, I'm saying, like... but rumor has it that it's actually going to be in season 3.
Okay.
Which I read on IMDb, and it spoiled it for me.
Oh, sorry.
So, it's fine.
But, I was going to ask if there was a season 3, because I know you had just watched the first two.
Yeah. Apparently, this guy, Tyler Posey, who was in
Teen Wolf. Not I know him, but...
He was also in Yoga Hosers, which is how I know him.
Worlds collide.
He's gonna be in season 3.
Wolf.
Yeah. So I found that out, and then I was like trying to find how it was connected to Woodsboro and Scream the movie.
Right.
That's when I found out that they're gonna use the mask in season 3.
Every time you say Woodsboro, I think Woodbridge, which is the neighboring town to Stars Hollow and Gilmore Girls.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Season 1 was great. It built up to, like, the big reveal very well, and, like, because that's the whole reason I love Scream, is, like, whodunit. But then after I finished season 1, I went back and watched all the movies because 2 and 3 are on Netflix.
Okay.
And I have the others, obviously.
Obviously.
So I was like, you know what? I have some time. I got up at, like, 6:30.
I hate that. Every time, like, when I get up for work, I try so hard not to wake
you. But it's not your fault. My body is just getting used to being up early.
Well, and also, like, you don't wake up while I'm there. It must be just, like, once I kiss you goodbye.
Yeah, I'm up. But it's okay, because I get to watch a lot of shit.
Perfect.
Because I'm killing time, and I'm like, there's nothing for me to do right now, so I'll just watch something.
And you do the dishes, which is
so
nice.
Yeah, like, I watch a movie, it's like 9 o'clock, so then I can go wash the dishes, and then watch another movie, and it's like 11 or 12, have some lunch, then I do the laundry, like, it's, I have a system.
I'm a stay-at-home,
But I rewatch the movies just to get, like, a sense of, because it's been a while since I watched the movies, and first, and foremost, I absolutely love Jamie Kennedy, who's like the, he works at the video store and knows all horror movie shit.
He's a rapist.
That's a different part of his life. He's not a rapist in the movie Scream.
I know. Just saying.
And that was more of a joke, but yeah.
Also, that was a Parks and Rec reference, just for anyone who didn't catch it. So, you know, it's some sort of rapist.
He is a rapist.
It's a rapper, Jerry.
But, so I love watching Jamie Kennedy act and be like, you know, if this was a horror movie, I'd be the number one suspect. But like, everybody's a suspect. Like, he starts freaking out in the movie, in the video store. And then Matthew Lillard, who is Shaggy from the live action Scooby-Doo movies, and does the actual voice of Shaggy on the newer cartoon. Huh. Like, between the one they're doing now, I think, and like the early 90s one. But it's hilarious to watch him act. And then Skeet Ulrich, who is Billy Loomis, the psycho boyfriend in Scream. He's a great actor, but he hasn't done much, I don't think. Okay. He was in a television show called Jericho, which didn't last very long. But like, it's cool to see all of them act, and like, the story is just like a bunch of kids die, like. And then you have like Drew Barrymore's in the beginning of the movie, but she dies, and then like Henry Winkler, who played the Fonz, is in the movie and he dies, and like, it's just cool things. And David Arquette and Courtney Cox are also in the movie. I forgot about that. That's like the big thing. Oh, so then that's where they met, so, and fell 90s. In love.
Really?
Yeah. Huh. And then in Scream 2, it's basically everyone who survived, which is like Jamie Kennedy, Neve Campbell, who's the story is based around, and then Courtney Cox.
What's Neve Campbell? I'm Neve Campbell.
Courtney Cox, David Arquette, and then Timothy Oliphant.
Yeah.
Oh, fantastic. He's in the movie.
Nice.
Spoilers, but he's the killer.
Damn.
He's part two, like, he's one of a two-person group.
Is he just Joel from Santa Clarita?
Kind of, like, in
ways. That was
ways,
a Joel face that you just... Yeah.
It's kind of. A lot to process. But he does have those moments where you're watching, it's like, that's fucking all fantastic. He's, like, hamming it up.
Cute.
And then, unfortunately, in Scream 2, Jamie Kennedy dies.
Damn it. So then he can become a rapper.
No. So Scream 3 comes around. So in Scream 2, it opens up with, like, so Neve Campbell's in college or whatever, and it's been a while since the murders have happened in Woodsboro. Sure. But they made a movie based on it.
Okay.
Based on Gail Weathers' book, which is Courtney Cox. She's like a news reporter.
Okay.
So she wrote a book about the Woodsboro murders.
Okay.
And the movie is called Stab. Right.
Great.
And the tagline is, this is gonna hurt. And it's just really cool. And like, they joke in like the first movie, like, I bet they'd get Tori Spelling to play me. And they actually have her play the character in the movie. And Luke Wilson, who was Kelso's brother.
Oh.
Casey Kelso. Yeah, he's in the movie as another character and shit like that. And Jamie
Kennedy, you breaking everything down into references.
I'm trying.
I will appreciate it.
And
it's
then
great.
Like, Jamie Kennedy's talking about who was playing their characters in the movie, and like, at least David Arquette, his character, got David Schwimmer to play him, and like making all these references to Friends because of the Courtney Cox connection.
That should have been the title of the blog of this podcast.
Yeah, the Courtney Cox connection. It's a lot of alliteration. I love it.
Me too.
So then in Scream 3, they're working on Stab 3.
Sure.
During this movie. And they have, like, the only guy you would probably recognize is Dion Richmond, who plays like a version of Jamie Kennedy's character. He was on Sister Sister, one of their boyfriends when they got older, or Bud from The Cosby Show. You might recognize his face if you saw
it. It's possible.
But, you know, they're all on the set of Stab 3, and now these killings are happening again.
Of course.
And Neve Campbell is like, well, the killer called me on my house phone, so, like, clearly what I'm doing isn't working, so I'm going to come and help solve this thing. And Patrick Dempsey, McDreamy,
right,
is there as a detective. And David Arquette's character now works as, like, a producer on the movie. And Courtney Cox, they were like in the movie universe, they were dating, mm-hmm. But then they like split up by the time Scream 3 happens.
Okay.
And then in Scream 4, they're married, okay. Which is weird because Courtney Cox and David Arquette actually divorced before working on Scream 4.
The Courtney Cox connection is getting confused.
I know, but that aside.
Okay.
So in Stab 3, it's really cool because, you know, there's this whole element of like what is real and fake because they're mm-hmm. working on a movie set and shit's happening on the movie right. set. And like one of my all-time favorite moments in the movie that I forgot about when I was watching Scream 3 again
uh-huh.
is so there's a scene where Gale Weathers is like snuck onto the movie set and is starting to like ask questions to get to the bottom of things, and mm-hmm. then she gets kicked off the set and like they close the door behind her and there's this like tour group coming in through the frame, and who do we see at the back of the tour group? Jay and Silent Bob. And they turn aww. To Gale Weathers like, isn't that news chick Connie fucking Chong? And she like flips them off, and then Jay's like, yeah, she wants me or something like that, right. And they just bomb off. But it's hilarious because not only like Jay and Silent Bob just right. by itself is that amazing, but like the company that put out Scream, Dimension, was like an offshoot of Miramax, which oh. is what
yeah Kevin
houses
Smith.
Kevin Smith's yes. movies.
I'm and, familiar.
Yeah, and then when they made Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back.
Mm-hmm.
That whole movie is about Jay and Silent Bob taking down the movie that's being made about them because mm-hmm. people are saying they're like fuckholes on the internet and shit like that. And they're like, if there's no movie, they can't badmouth us because nobody knows who we are in real life and shit
sure.
like that.
Okay.
But they're on the back lot of like the movie sets and they stumble into a Scream sequel.
A screequel?
Yeah. And like Wes Craven, the director, is there and shit like that. And it's just a really cool moment because it's almost like two movies in one, like just the connection.
You're so cute.
I absolutely loved it, and I totally forgot about it when I was watching. Aww. I was like, oh my god, just amazing. Like,
I wish you could see his little happy face right now. It's precious.
Look, when Jay and Silent Bob show up in anything, it's
right,
just,
it's Christmas.
It fills me with so much joy. So then I watched Scream 4, which happens 10 years after Scream 3.
Okay.
Neve Campbell's character is like, I'm done living as a victim. I'm moving on with my life. I've written a book, blah, blah, blah.
Wow.
She comes back to Woodsboro because that's sort of where it all started. And shit starts happening again. But the movie, as meta as it was before, with being like, we're a horror movie, making fun mm-hmm. of horror movies and like shit like that. They've made 7 Stab movies by this point, and the movie actually opens up with Stab 7 playing, but you don't know it when you're watching it.
Okay.
So, like, two girls are watching Stab 6, and they turn it off, and then it, like, something happens in the house where they're like, I'm gonna go check it out, and then they die. But then it ends, and it's two, like, they, like, pull out, and another two pair of girls are watching that movie happen. So it's, like, a movie within a movie within huh. a movie. Because then when it finally gets to the actual real-life movie...
Right.
You're totally fucking confused on what's happening, but you don't expect what's about to happen, and, like...
To interrupt you, so I just reached for you.
I'm just not gonna hit you with my hand gestures.
One of the things that they mentioned in The Hate U Give was they're yeah. talking about like shit that white people do.
Uh-huh.
One of them was like, they split up all the time, and it's so fucking stupid. They should never split up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what one of the characters in the television show is like. Like, that's a very bad idea. Like, that's rule number one of horror movies is like, you shouldn't
split up.
But in Scream 4, you get all of the things you love of Scream.
Sure.
But it's sort of like a remake / sequel.
A requel?
Yes. Where it's like all these killings are happening around Sydney Prescott, which is Neve Campbell's character. her niece. Mm-hmm. She's like the epicenter of all of this shit.
I had no idea Neve Campbell was female until like 30 seconds ago.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh. Yeah, I guess I didn't open with that, but I didn't think I had to.
Well, I thought Neve was short for like Neville.
No.
Which is a man.
Yeah, no.
Anyway. Huh.
Yeah.
The more you know.
So, and Emma Roberts plays the niece.
Okay.
Just for faces. But there are two guys that run like film club, or they call it cinema club because they're film geeks that right. like Citizen Kane and all that bullshit.
Sure.
They like come up with the rules of like, if this is a horror movie, what would be happening? So they introduce new ideas because of the remake slash sequel angle.
Mm-hmm.
And then Adam Brody's actually in the movie briefly as
your
a
man
cop.
Crush.
Yeah. And Anthony Anderson.
No which, argument.
No, it's fine. Adam Brody. He's a great character person. Character
and he's beautiful.
Yeah,
he could do worse.
That's,
yeah,
it's not about that, but
he's Dave Rogowski on Gilmore Girls.
I know, like
Lane's never done better.
He shouldn't have left.
No,
love Dave fucking Rogowski.
OC. Yeah. Anyway,
but like the movie ends with spoilers, but Emma Roberts is actually the killer.
Damn.
And she was like, you know, my whole life has been hearing about your shit, and now I'll finally be the center of all this, and I won't have to work for anything. Like I can. Buy my way into everything, and like I wrote my own story and shit like that. So she's like the
good
sole survivor, and she like kills Neve Campbell and is like, I'm taking over and nobody will know it's me. But then she fucks herself up, like stabs herself in the shoulder and then like smashes her face on glass like picture frame to like get all these battle scars and shit.
Yikes.
Like that. And then she wakes up in the hospital, she's survived, and she's like, I'm just glad it's over and all this other stuff. And then David Arquette is like, and you'll be happy to know that it looks like Sydney is going to pull through. And she's like, fucking God damn it. And like she rips her IVs out and goes to find Neve Campbell and like finish the job, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And then that all ends in the hospital room that Neve was in. And Neve Campbell's like, you forgot one thing about remakes or something like that.
I'm not left-handed.
No. It's like, don't fuck with the original.
And oh,
it was
shit.
A cool line, but anyways, like, that saga was just amazing to rewatch. And like,
good.
Since Wes Craven has recently passed, not recently, it's been a couple years now, but I still live like he passed away the other day.
Sure.
How does that affect your daily life? It's rough.
I'm sorry.
It's just a very cool movie and something I hadn't seen before. Like, not Scream 4 in particular, but
right.
like all the movies. And like some good characters and actors came out of those movies. And that's what I latch on to the most. And like I said, the whodunit part of it.
Right.
Because like the whole movie, you're like thinking, who could it be?
Mm-hmm.
And then come out of left field. Like when they were making Scream 3. There were like a few different versions of the scripts out there so that if anything
mm-hmm.
leaked, nobody would know
nice.
What the real ending was.
Huh.
Yeah. So that was just wonderful to go back down memory lane. And then I watched Creep, the original movie. Because I think I don't know if I talked about Creep 2 or I mentioned it at some point, but the Creep 2 movie just came out recently.
Okay.
On Netflix, and I had watched it. I had seen Creep a while back, but I wanted to watch Creep 2, and then I went back and watched Creep 1 to see if there was anything I was missing. But the concept of the movie, so Mark Duplass, the actor, he was in that movie Safety Not Guaranteed, which I told you about
okay.
on an episode of this podcast.
Oh.
he put an ad in the paper and was like, I'm a time traveler, and I want somebody to come with me, and if you
want to, and all that stuff. Yeah,
yeah, it was a very good like character movie.
With who was in that?
Aubrey Plaza.
That's right.
Yeah. It was a very good character movie where you weren't 100% sure if he was legit or not,
okay.
like if he was telling the truth or if he was just crazy. Mm-hmm. This is very much that same concept, basically.
Okay.
But the difference is, so in Creep 1, the guy puts out an ad, for a videographer, I'll pay you $1,000 for a day to come and film me for like this video diary thing.
Okay.
And then you meet him, and the story is, so it's all like, not found footage, I guess, but it's all done from the point of view of the camera.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, the videographer is narrating and, like, communicating and, like, turning the camera around and shit like that. Mm-hmm. So it could be a little disorienting if you're not into that style. But the movie itself is just very well written and very good. So the story is that Joseph, which is Mark Duplass's character, he had cancer. He beat it. And now it's come back. It's inoperable and all this. His wife is pregnant. And he wants to make, like, a video diary for his son.
Okay.
So that he knows what he was like when he was alive and all that stuff. But, he's very weird and off-putting at first. Because he, like, so he lives at, like, this house up on the hill and, like, like jumps out of nowhere sometimes just to scare you and things like that. But the whole video thing is about, like, they're gonna get into some heavy places and, like, from the heart and shit like that. But the very first thing he does after introducing himself to the videographer, which his name is Aaron, I think, he's like, so I'm gonna get in the tub and then we're good to go. And he runs upstairs and Aaron's like,
what?
It's like, Aaron, you down there? Come on, come up. It's okay. Like, cool. So he goes into the bathroom and he's like, yeah, no, we're gonna get into some weirder places than this, so just come on in, it's fine. I mean, whatever. And he's like, are you gonna be okay with this? He's like, yeah, no, it's fine. So the point he's getting in the tub to have what he calls tubby time, because it was something him and his dad did when he was a kid.
Okay.
And since he can't actually do that with his future son, he wants to sort of replicate that, which, as a genuine thought or practice, it's very sincere and very, like, heartfelt.
A little forewarning or explanation.
Right. But, like, from his perspective is, like, I'm walking into this just for $1,000, like, not knowing what
not
I was
enough.
Getting into. No, it's super weird. Yeah. Like, I see this guy's dick hanging out.
Just right away.
Just super awkward.
No, thank you.
Yeah. And then they get through it, and it's fine. And then I want to say the next point they go on this hike or something. And... you know, the whole time Joseph's character is, like, talking about life and death and things like that and, like, all this other stuff. And they're walking in the woods and they don't really know where they're going. And then Joseph just takes off and runs off into the woods. And Aaron's like, what the fuck? Like, Joseph, where are you? Like, shit like that. And then he's, like, looking for him. And then he's not finding him. And then all of a sudden, like... Aaron turns, and then Joseph pops up out of nowhere screaming and everything like that. And Joseph was like, you know, I have a weird sense of humor. I just thought it would be funny and all this other stuff. And then there was that moment in your eyes, like, can I ask you a personal question? Like, it looked like you were going to kill me. Was that true and shit like that?
Ugh.
And so the movie keeps playing on that. Like, they keep getting into weird places, and Joseph keeps talking about, like, weird shit.
Okay.
Where you don't, like, you're in the point of view of Aaron, the videographer, who's coming into something he's not sure of. Yeah.
Not sure.
And, like, the whole time you're, like, pissed at this guy because he's yanking your chain, but you're still there to do a job, and, like, it's just slightly annoying. It's not actually, like, harmful. Rough. And then...
been talking a lot.
Yeah. And then... they go to a diner after this other shit happens. They go to a diner and... Joseph asks him something that he was ashamed of or something like that, just to know him a little bit better.
Mm-hmm.
And he talks about how he used to wet his pants as a kid or something like that. And then Joseph was like, can I go now? Like, can I say something that I'm ashamed of? And so he pulls out his phone and he like shows Aaron these pictures of Aaron. Like when Aaron arrives at the house, he like knocks on the door and nobody answers. And he's there for like 20, 30 minutes, like just waiting around because nobody's come to the door. And in the photos, Joseph was watching Aaron from like...
That creeps me out.
Yeah, no, that's... The movie's called Creep.
I know,
so
but I hate it.
All right, so I'm sorry. But so... basically, so spoilers, because I'm just going to get to the ending. To,
good. Because I can't walk outside by myself ever again.
It's
now.
Fine. the movie ends with... You find out that it's not... His name isn't Joseph or something like that, but he doesn't have cancer. He's just a pathological liar and shit like that.
Great.
And basically, Joseph more or less falls in love with Aaron because of how they connect through this experience, and then he straight up murders him.
Sure.
And, like, it's all on film.
Right.
Like, but he's like, and I will... Of all the people I've done this to, I will love you the most, because even when, like, you knew the truth, you still trusted me, because he, like, asks to meet him in, like, an open public space and, like, this park bench or whatever. But he has his back to, like, where the guy would come from. And he's like, yeah, you just never turned around. You were always such a good guy in this experience. But, like, the way Mark Duplass plays the character... He kind of, obviously it's fucked up, but it's
yeah,
it's somewhat endearing the way his mind works, as in that, like, I don't know how to explain it. Obviously, you don't want to side with the killer.
No.
But when Creep 2 happens, it's sort of the same premise, but the ad is, I'm a serial killer. And I've just lost my way, and I don't have that motivation to kill anymore, and it's like, I think this is it. And then somebody who, like, makes YouTube videos of, like, encounters with people, like, stumbles upon it and is like, this sounds weird and interesting, and then goes off and does it. And it's basically the same story, kind right. of, but with the, knowledge of the fact that he is a killer and has done it, and she's like, she can't decide if he's telling the truth or not, but then, like, he shows him footage, he shows her footage of, like, killing Aaron and shit like that, and, like, just getting into that weird place, but it still ends in a very interesting way. She survives and is, like, doing her own thing in New York City, and is on the subway, and then you hear this whistling, which earlier in the movie, like, it links to his character, Mark Duplass's character.
Okay.
And then she, like, sees him across the subway car, and it's like, holy shit. I know it's yucky, but it's very good writing.
Good.
And if you could get through it,
I can't even get through you talking about
it. I know, but it's still light outside, so you're fine.
Yeah, but it doesn't matter because it's going to be dark.
It's going to be fine. We're going to talk about other things before I... All right.
Great, so then we'll turn off the light. I'll be trying to fall asleep.
No, it's going
to
be okay. Great. So, other than things I've watched at home, just all over the place.
Out in the world.
Out in the world, I actually saw the Solo movie. Let me try that again. I saw the Solo movie.
The Solo movie.
The Solo movie.
You gotta put some bass in your
Bobby
voice.
Bobby Newport.
He's never had a real job in his life.
That actually works.
That's pretty good.
Sounds good on the headphones.
Well, that's unfortunate because it's not happening again.
Why?
I'm not speaking like that again.
You don't have to. I'm saying I sound good. You sound all right.
I'm Hillary Crumb and I'm out.
We didn't even get to the movie we watched.
Well, so, no, because you've been talking for half an hour and you're not done yet.
Okay, first of all, you talked for the first half hour. I am not at a half hour yet. I'm at 53 minutes.
You're at 53 minutes.
53 minutes of the hour podcast where you talked for 30 minutes.
I looked at the clock when you started.
That's fine. These numbers don't lie here. Anyway.
Talk about Solo.
Nothing. As a casual Star Wars fan. Look, I love the fact that it exists. Like, in the same respect of Harry Potter, like, I like the universe that's been created.
Okay.
But I like Harry Potter more because it just, better. I don't know, it connects to me in a different way. You can't say it's better. It's better for you on your personal preference, but to diminish a whole society of people who love Star Wars.
I'm comfortable with that.
Well, obviously.
I'm not saying it sucks. I'm saying Harry Potter's better.
Okay. There would be people that argue the opposite.
That's fine. That's all I'm saying. They're entitled to their incorrect opinion.
Anyway, my point is, I like the Star Wars universe. I don't know everything there is about. I don't know everything that there is about Star Wars.
That's
I don't
probably
know
part of the reason we're dating.
Everything, you know, of all the characters. Like, I know some key things, and there are, like, still questions and things that, you know, I have. Like, how does a lightsaber, like, know when to stop?
Right.
And things like
I've
that.
I've always wondered that as well.
Yeah. But, you know, I just, I dig the universe. And the lightsaber concept as well. Like,
right,
I even though it's incomprehensible, it's still cool.
Right.
And then some side characters, like Han Solo was always a cool character, and his sidekick Chewie. So this movie is a Star Wars story. So it's not about, you know, Jedis and the Force and shit like that. It takes the life of Han Solo and, like, follows it from when we first meet him
from
at, like,
tits
18.
To teeth.
Yes, from tits to teeth. So, like, overall, it was an all right movie. It was definitely fun because there are moments where it's like, okay, so it's a Han Solo movie.
Mm-hmm.
So there are going to be things that explain how Han Solo becomes the Han Solo that we know in the Star Wars movie,
right,
when he's introduced. So anytime they would be like, so Han Solo and Chewbacca, like, they would play the Star Wars theme, like, a variation of it, right, under the moments that are happening. Like, well, so Woody Harrelson is, like, he's almost like a grown-up Han Solo. Like, not as cool, but definitely, like, I do what I want for myself type attitude. He has this huge-ass, like, assault weapon.
Huge-ass.
That he breaks down into what becomes Han's blaster, and he tosses it to Han, and Han is sitting there with, like, the campfire next to him, and, like, is looking at his blaster, and then it's like the Star Wars music plays under that. Not slowly. If it were slow, it would probably make me cry. Like what
we'll get to.
Yeah. And then, like, Han Solo meeting Lando Calrissian, played by Donald Glover, like, all those moments were super cool. And the things I didn't tell you about the movie is that Lando has a sidekick too. It's this robot called L3.
Okay.
He's very independent and, like, not abrasive, but social justice-y robot. Female robot.
Nice.
That, like, anytime. So they're at, when he meets Lando for the first time, they're at this bar.
Mm-hmm.
And the robot is, like, there's this almost robo-wars going on. Like, there's a group of human and alien life forms looking in on this cage that these two robots are fighting inside it. And she's, like, trying to communicate to the robot that this isn't the life. Like, they've brainwashed you into doing this just for their entertainment. Like, you can break free of your programming and all this shit. And then, like, the proprietor or something, Ron Howard's brother, basically, who directed the movie, comes out and is like, get out of here and all this other stuff. And Lando's, like, trying to tell her to not, you know, get into any trouble and things like that. And then I think he tries to, like, push her or something like that. But she basically, like, throws him against the wall and, like, throws him down on the ground and is like, fuck you, basically, to him. And, like, there's this whole other scene where she's, like, letting robots, like, taking off their inhibitor chips or something so that they can have a mind of their own. And is like, you can do anything you want now. Be free. And, like, it starts this robot revolution that starts fucking everything up.
Interesting.
And she's, like, unregretful or unapologetic about
right.
it and is just like,
that's fucking,
yeah, exactly. Yeah. And she's such a cool character. And then, like, you know, the whole the Millennium Falcon can make the Kessel Run in under 12 parsecs and things like that. You get to find out how all that happens.
Right.
It is a very cool movie, and probably for somebody who loves Star Wars more, would appreciate it more.
Yeah, but you said your buddies loved it.
Yeah, because there's a reveal that, you know, just in case the guys talking about shit are listening, it would be a movie that I shouldn't spoil on the podcast. There's a reveal at the end that they just fucking lost their shit over. And so if they haven't seen the movie by now, I don't want to spoil it for them.
Okay. But
it was a very cool movie, and like, yeah, all those moments that just like, fucking yeah, it's Han Solo. Like, even getting his name is like
right.
a cool little moment. So I was definitely glad I watched it.
Good.
And I think that's it for the things I've watched myself. I'm sure I've missed a few things, but we'll get it on the next one.
Yeah, like I have another book that I'm reading, but yeah. we'll get it next week. I'm not finished yet, so.
Once the show ends, please don't shed those tears. We'll come back again, so have no fear. Oh, we told you that it just might end up this way. What's the show called again? You cannot be saying, why didn't I you warn me? Why didn't I you warn me now? Why didn't I you warn me? Why didn't I you warn me? Why didn't I you warn me? Why didn't I you warn me now?